Welcome one and all once again to Do a World in episode 53. I believe based on our schedule, and we'll get to this at the end of the show, this is going to be our last traditional episode for the year. We're just going to recap the last 2 weeks or so of gaming, you know, talking about what we got, picked up during Black Friday, and the news of the past 2 weeks. Joining me this week, we have Chad.
Hey, everybody.
Who may or may not be hungover, or probably still drunk.
Rough night.
Rough night. You started drinking at like 1 p.m.
Worst morning, actually. Night, pretty good. Rough morning, we'll say.
I'm also going to point out that based on time zones, it's about 4:30 Chad's time as of this recording. So it's also a terrible afternoon, apparently. We have Jason.
Hey.
And we have Daniel.
Hello.
So yeah, like I said, we're going to be talking about the games we've been playing. And who wants to kick us off with what they've been playing or whatever?
Well, I've been playing the beta for the new Counter-Strike.
And how is that?
CSGO.
Yeah, it looks really good. That's about all I can say at the moment, because you get given one map and about 5 guns and to shoot people. It's absolutely enjoyable. I actually like it, unlike every other Counter-Strike they've released. They haven't changed a lot yet, but like I said, you haven't got a lot to play with, so at the moment, you're not going to see much different. But it looks really good. And that's about all I've been playing, really, because I've been poor.
Is that the game you were playing before that you couldn't tell us about?
Or no, it's not. The other one, the game I was playing before that I can't tell you about, I still can't tell you about. Unfortunately.
Fair enough. What about you, Jason? What have you been playing?
Well, I picked up Forza 4 over Black Friday weekend. So, pretty much been playing a lot of that. And a couple games of the usual, you know, FIFA, Battlefield here and there. But mostly Forza. So far, just good things to say about it. I don't know. If you like cars and stuff. Fun.
Have you ever played the Gran Turismo series?
A little bit, but I've never had like a PlayStation except for a PSP, so.
I was gonna ask how it compares, but.
I don't know, it's, like I haven't played GT5 since the Prologue version, so I don't really know how it compares, but for some reason I didn't. Like, it seems like Forza has more things to customize. I don't know if that's true anymore. But, like, it can be as realistic or, like, as casual as you want it to be, which is pretty cool.
I forget, do you have a Kinect?
Yeah.
Did you try to connect features for that game?
I've tried the what's it called, Auto Vista mode, just for a little bit, just to mess around. And, I don't know, it seemed kind of wonky, like it wasn't really responding well. But, so I don't really know. I didn't get a chance to set up the head tracking yet or try the Kinect racing.
Okay. What about you, Chad? What have you been playing?
Nothing new, I don't think.
StarCraft, Skyrim, and Catherine.
That's pretty much it, yeah. I've been meaning to go out and get Zelda for the past, I don't know, however long it's been since it came out.
2 weeks.
Really? Fuck me, that's bad. I need to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I was gonna go out and get it this morning, and then I didn't. Maybe tomorrow morning. I don't know. I'm gonna get it at some point, so I'm really looking forward to playing that, but nothing really new for me otherwise.
Man, I wish I could. One of those times where I regret selling my Wii.
As for me, I have been playing Zelda. I've actually bested it. But before I get to Zelda, I do want to touch on Super Mario 3D Land, since it's the one I actually put a review on the site for. And somebody gave me crap for it because the review does start off by calling it a perfect handheld title. And I just wanted to expand on that, even though I do it in the review. And what I mean by a perfect handheld title, in no way do I mean that it's a perfect game. I do think, and I think we've had this discussion before, that sometimes you don't want console gaming on the go, but you do want console-like experiences at times. And I think Super Mario 3DN distills the Mario franchise into pieces that works perfectly well for the 3DS. It's not a, like, if 3DN was on the Wii or the GameCube or whatever, I don't think it would be as good of a game. The levels can be beat in, like, a minute, two, if you had it or whatever. And stuff like that. But the way they craft the game is that you can pick it up and play on the train for 5 or 10 minutes, or you can play it at home for 3 or 4 hours, and you'll get some type of progress, and you'll feel like you're doing something in the game. And I think that's very key to making a handheld title. It's the ability to make it pick up and play, but also just crafting it within this larger world, this larger universe, where some, you know, like, there's more to the game than just, like, oh, I'll play a random level here or there with no real connection.
Yeah.
Granted, Mario isn't what I would call a very story-heavy game, but you do have some progress. It's, you know, you go through worlds, you have boss encounters and stuff like that, and there is that in the game, and I feel that, you know, making these micro-levels, which you can pick up and play and beat in, like, a minute and a half or whatever, helps. And then you can go back to those levels, and you can get star medals, or you can go back and you can, you know, beat your time, because part of one of the features of the game is the street pass, spot pass features, where, you know, you exchange your best times with strangers. So it encourages you to kind of have a good time. And this is something I noticed when I went to pick up Zelda, is that I was online for it, and, like, I got random people's time, and they had, like, you know, they'd have, like, 10 seconds shorter than I did. So I'd play that level 10 and try to get through it as fast as possible. Part of it was,
It's a pretty cool feature.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is basically a leaderboard, but I think there's also something, and I'm sure you've all had this, there's something a bit more competitive, I think, about being in the presence of the same person, as opposed to saying, like, oh, you know, like, I'm 9,000th on an online leaderboard of the whole world.
Well, if you're in the presence of somebody, you can just go, there, I'll just beat you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's kind of been my... I'm not a huge competitive person online because of that, but, you know, I do, like, the trash talking after the fact.
Yeah.
And I think being in the same room helps that. I don't, you know, it's not as fun online, I find, personally. Like I said, it's a fantastic game. It makes great use of the 3D. I personally don't believe it's the, as many reviews call it, you know, the game that proves 3D as a technology. It's a great use of it, but you can still beat most of the game without ever using it.
Well, you have to be able to, because you can turn 3D off.
Yeah, which is what I said when the 3DS was announced, well, when they announced the Decider at E3 or whatever, is that 3D would never become a main feature of the system, because the moment you make it a mandatory option,
it's the moment it's people the moment, don't buy into it.
Yeah, but, it's the moment you say.
Well, I mean, this just goes back to that age-old argument, where it's just like, but it just it enhances the experience
from a visual perspective, and that's all it needs to do. It does enhance,
and
Nintendo crafts some really well. Yeah. Okay, this is the part that, you know, gets me, and it's really difficult to say, but the game is split up into two parts, basically. You have the main game, which is worlds 1 through 8. You have your boss battles, you defeat Bowser, you save Princess Peach. But once you do that, you unlock another set of 8 worlds, completely different levels and tasks and stuff like that. And from what I've played of this, almost everything in there uses the 3D. And it uses it better. And to me, it feels like the second half of the game is the game Nintendo went out to make. And the first half is kind of like one long tutorial. I'm not saying that the first half is bad. It's a phenomenal game, or I wouldn't have reviewed it as well. But I think the second half is a much better game, especially as far as using the system's features. So, yeah, I mean, and Nintendo's done this recently where they kind of had this, like, we'll make a game that everybody can enjoy, but for those people who want an extra challenge, we'll include this bonus mission. Like, the Super Mario Galaxy has the other 121 star coins after you beat the game. Or New Super Mario Bros. Wii has the 9th world, which you can get. Zelda has the hero mode, which is, you know, you can't find hearts in the wild or anything. So the only way you can refill your health is either through potions or at the end of a boss, a dungeon. And stuff like that. So, you know, it's kind of their way of kind of catering to everybody, but also offering an extra challenge for the people who want to be, you know, like the quote-unquote hardcore gamers. And I guess going to Zelda, is another fantastic game. I had a lot more problems with it, and I, you know, a lot of people have varying opinions on it. One of the things is that you return to the same three or four structures throughout the course of the game. So yeah, I mean, you know, for a lot of people that takes away part of the exploration because you kind of, you know, it's the same three areas. It doesn't really radically change much throughout the course of the game, but Nintendo is smart enough to kind of make it different every time you go there. And they do open up different parts of the environment depending on what weapons you have and stuff like that. And they do offer you different tasks. I really don't want to say too much because it's going to spoil it, but you do, you know, you'll go back to like Elden Volcano three times. And all three times you go back, it's three radically different experiences with it. My favorite is the desert area because each time you go back to dress, you do access a different part of the desert. So that's always expanding. Faron Woods, I think, is the one that you kind of replay the same area. And this is, you know, some people are kind of iffy on this because, and this is a spoiler, but I apologize in advance. But between the third and fourth dungeon, you actually return to the first dungeon to do something, and people had issues with that because technically you're using a dungeon that you've already been to. But you go there, and it's like a 5 or 10 minute diversion to find something, and that's it. Like you have to replay the entire dungeon again. So there's that. You know, I've always been a fan of motion controls, so it didn't have anything to prove to me personally, but the motion controls in Zelda works well. Throughout the course of the game, I had four issues with the motion controls, like as in four times where it wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. Two of the times were aiming weapons, like one time was with the Beetle where it wouldn't center, it was aiming towards the ground. Another time was with the bow and arrow, which again wasn't aiming properly. But you know, this is quickly remedied by pressing down on the D-pad. Two times I had sword issues. Both of them were in the end game sequence, so I won't talk about that specifically. Let's just say, and this is something I brought up with when I played the game at New York Comic Con, is I don't like to stab in motion games because they never really work, and you have to do that often, and that was frustrating because half of the time it wouldn't do the stab in motion for me. He'll do the vertical spin attack, and that was just frustrating because I could have finished that a lot shorter than it took me. Other than that, the game looks fantastic for the most part. I don't like the art style works. I don't like it up close because it makes everything look blurry and washed out, which looks great from a distance and using it as a field of depth and stuff like that. But up close, it just makes everything look muddy and blurry, which, you know, again, you could say that's the art style. It just doesn't do anything for me that way. Character models are great. I love the story. We don't have a category for this, I don't think, but Garaham would be my nominee for Villain of the Year. He's just so over the top and awesome. He has some great scenes in it. It does pay up into the story and kind of ties in elements to future games. So there's that to look forward to if you're a Zelda fan and you actually care about this overarching story. Other than that, you know, I recommend both of these games, Super Mario 3D Land and Zelda Skyward Sword. I can tell you, and we'll cover this when we get there in January, both of them would be nominees for my Game of the Year. So yeah, I think that's it. If anybody else has anything.
Not really. I should be able to talk about the Star Wars Old Republic beta, but I didn't realize that they emailed me a beta key.
I could talk about that, I guess, but...
Oh, you should say that?
I mean, as much as I ever play any MMO ever, I went until I died once, and then I was like, yep, it's an MMO.
What class did you do?
What do you think?
Sith? I don't know.
Yeah, clearly. The one class that everybody gravitates to instantly. I gotta say, the opening movies are just so sick. Their CG is really, really cool.
Yeah, I want their CG team to just go do like a full length movie.
I would be totally on board with that.
Right?
Yeah, that would be sick. So yeah, I mean, it's an MMO. I don't know enough about MMOs to really comment on all the nuances and stuff, but it seems to incorporate the Star Wars universe well into that kind of game. So like, I can see it working. I don't know if it'll ever recoup what it has cost them, but I can see it being pretty successful. It seems fun.
Well, they say they only need 500,000 subscribers.
Yes, but...
Although they get it's a different matter.
Yeah, I was about to say, we'll see how long it takes before this goes free-to-play. It seems to be the way of the MMO. I mean, I think, you know, the thing with MMO, and I don't know if it's Star Wars exactly, is that if you're asking people to pay $15 a month to play your game, I would drop the entry price from $50-$60 to maybe $20. I think people are more willing to do something like that if you got it for a discount.
Yeah, I agree, because you pay the full price, and then you have to do subscription on top. It's like...
Yeah.
That's actually been the barrier for me a couple of times. Looking into getting into it, and I've been like, okay, this subscription price, like, I don't feel great about subscription prices, because obviously if you stop playing, you're still paying and stuff, and that's weird. But I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll go for it. And then it's like, wait, no, I have to pay full price for this game and then a subscription?
Yeah.
No.
And the other thing is that you say if you stop paying, you're still paying. But if you stop paying and then you want to pay, then it's a whole hassle because then you have to reach. And yeah, it's like a lot of entry. It's like a barrier of entry for a lot of people. And you know, it worked. Like DC Universe Online went free to play, and it's fun. But now you kind of end up with the other problem where there's too many people playing, so you end up with congestion and lag and all this other stuff.
And not only that is that I'm not a fan. I tried playing DCUO because it was free. I couldn't lose anything, and not only was it a pain in the ass to get into the game at first, because it was a 17 gig download, and then I had to download another 4 gig on top of it.
Oh, that's all. It's like a gig download on the PS3, and then it's a 15 gig patch.
Well, I had to download 17 gig initially.
Ah, yeah, so.
And that was a pain in the ass. And then I get into the game, and I just discover that I'm limited in 10,000 different ways, so I actually pay the sub fee, and it's fairly annoying.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, I'm sure somebody's gonna come along and find some way to make an MMO interesting and mainstream besides World of Warcraft. And that's the other thing, is that you're competing with that juggernaut, and it's not easy to get people away from it, especially since a lot of MMOs use a similar structure, where it's basically just kind of horde raids, where you just go and kill a bunch of things, or collect a bunch of things from these people. And that's kind of my problem with DC Universe Online, is that they dress it up, but no matter how you dress it up, you're doing the same thing. You beat up such and such enemies until they drop such and such a thing, until you have enough of them to complete your mission, and that's it. And you can only do that for so long before it becomes tedious.
Yeah, I know that.
That's me. Yes, I guess that would do it for what we've been saying. It's actually probably been rather quiet since this is the busy time of year, but I assume...
Sorry, I forgot to mention one massive game I've been playing and I've been loving since I got it.
Saints Row the Third?
No, not actually. I haven't been able to get that, but somebody bought me Serious Sam 3, and that came out on the 22nd of November, and oh my god, that game... Let's just say this, right? The final boss battle can be described as a huge, giant sand robot monster jetpack battle. And if you like Serious Sam, just buy it. Don't read reviews or anything. Just buy it because you'll love it. You get to shoot a ton of things, and oh my god, I love it. I can't say anymore.
Okay, and I've got Serious Sam 3 Kamikaze or something on my Android device, but I haven't tried that out yet. I've also been playing some mobile games, but we really won't talk about that too much.
That reminds me. I played Infinity Blade 2. That's kind of a big mobile game-ish.
Yeah, and I saw you went from loving it to kind of like...
Yeah, you know, they did some cool things where they actually added like a story and stuff, but like... They also very quickly go back to your character dies and your son takes up your place thing, where you just kind of go through the same castle over and over, but they like added a little bit of twist to it. I don't know. It's a step in the right direction, but I think it's still, you know, not like a 3DS or PSP quality game yet. But it is $7, so it's, you know.
It's the steep entry price for a mobile game.
Yeah.
I was about to say, you know, having an Android, and you kind of get spoiled with the Amazon App Store because you get an app for the day for free.
If you live in America.
If you live in America, which I do, so I'm golden. I don't know about Daniel.
I think someone's better.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of the games I do try it is because, you know, and I find the game that works best, or the games I find that work best for me are tower defense games, because they're, you know, they're simple point and click adventure games that really, really do work with the devices. And on my tablet, it's a fantastic little thing. I just got one this morning. It's a Living Dead tower defense game, which is based on George Romero's House of the Dead series. So there's that.
New game of the year?
My new game of the year. I say that, I mean, last year my game of the year would have been Bejeweled 3, but we didn't count that. Such an addictive little project. The other one I've been playing is Jelly Defense, which is a fantastic little tower defense game on your Android device. I don't know if it's on iOS. And it's, you know, it's kind of like, I forget, Ikariko or whatever you call that, where you kind of, it's a tower defense game, but you also have a bit of strategy because you have blue and red enemies, and blue devices attack blue enemies, and red devices attack red enemies. So, you have to mix and match and make sure you have a little of both so that you don't get overwhelmed when one card comes through the wave or whatever. So it has that, you know, that extra element added to it instead of just building the best stuff as fast as possible. And it looks like we're being joined by Mr. Gerhardt.
DK Rap. DK Rap.
Well, he's finally here, performing for you. If you know the words, you can join in, too!
Oh, no, this is a solo song, so you get to sing it.
Oh, no, you see, you get the song in pieces, and it gets listeners to come back because that's the first part of it. And then 2 months down the line, I'll sing the second part of it. And by the time that it ends, it'll be a couple years, and they can take the pieces of the podcast and have those parts and then, you know, edit them to put them together, and they'll have an entire DK rap.
See, we just have to feed him segues for the next time.
Fair enough. And I guess while he's joining us and he's finished his part of the DK rap for this month, apparently, what have you been playing recently?
What have I been playing? I finished up Sonic Generations, which is actually really, really fun. I loved it. I did it for a guy.
I've been playing that too. I forgot.
And, you know, I tried jumping into Sonic games in the past, like Sonic Colors and stuff, and I was turned off immediately by controls and physics I didn't like. But I stuck some time with this one. And, you know, I've been, you know, in charge of finding, like, the red coins that happen in each level. And finding those is caused, you know, me to look for the higher path, the secret path that keeps you going fast, because I've been doing videos that allow for searching for the 5 red coins and also getting an S rank at the same time. So I had gone, and when I'm doing the video, I don't like making mistakes. So I go through each level trying to record like 18 or 19 times, trying to make it flawless. And it's, you know, when you get going and you do everything perfectly and you don't lose speed, that's what Sonic's about. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think part of it is that it's memorization of the level, which is part of why I think, I mean, me personally, I run through a Sonic game once and I really don't go back. But yeah, you know, memorizing the levels, the pitfalls and stuff like that, so you can keep your momentum going is part of the charm, which I don't think the 3D games got as well until recently with like Sonic Unleashed and Sonic Color and then Sonic Generation.
Right, right. And I guess also, I don't know how much you guys have talked about or how much you've played it, but I've been going through Zelda. I'm about, I think, 20 hours in. So
like halfway?
I guess. I mean, I got the first flame, and now I just got the claw shots. So that's about where I am.
Okay, so yeah, you're more or less, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Because I could say you've done more than half the dungeons, but that doesn't necessarily mean you've done half the game.
Right. I love it. I do. I love how, you know, how different it is, how different it feels going to a new place and then, you know, all the puzzles that you have to do just to get to the dungeon. My only gripe is that I don't feel, involved in the, like, it's a cohesive world as Wind Waker or Ocarina or even Twilight does. I occasionally go back to the hub world and I guess it's okay there, but it's, I don't know, there's just this disconnect. And, you know, I just go from place to place. I think it's because each place that I go to, each new adventuring place, isn't full of NPCs. There's that occasional wandering Goron But aside from that,
I love him. He's an awesome character.
Yeah, but he is. I guess the Kikuis.
I do like to focus on Skyoff because during the course of your adventure, you get to watch as these characters grow and develop from the beginning to the end. And again, I don't want to say too much about it, but a lot of them do offer you side quests and stuff like that, and they do have their own kind of adventures and development outside of when you're around.
Yeah.
For example, one of my favorite characters in the game is the boy at the start of the game, but I won't mention why, but he's a phenomenal character who has great growth throughout the game.
Like what about
the little kid?
No, Groose.
Groose.
What about, how big of a deal is the Motion Plus control?
Yeah,
how much does that change the game? Like, because that's the big thing.
It changes.
Are you like saying compared to Twilight
compared
Princess?
Compared to, yeah.
Earl, do you want this one?
I will say I think it changes it. I mean, one, unlike Twilight, it uses motion for everything. So even some of your old standbys, and I know a lot of people have issues with the bomb, for example, because blowing it is kind of annoying. Especially if you play your game sitting down because you have to point the remote completely towards the field to actually get that.
Mm-hmm.
That's only an issue when you first start doing it because you have a timer when you pick up the ice bomb, and once you get the bomb back, you know, the bomb doesn't start diffusing as soon as you take it out, so that's golden. I love the Beetle. I think it's a fantastic addition to the series,
yep.
And it's one of the things that came because of motion chest. One thing I will note, and a lot of people are kind of, it doesn't use the sensor. I mean, it doesn't use the sensor. It doesn't use IR pointing, so everything's motion controlled, which has its benefits that you don't have to point at the TV for any of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that. And swordplay, I think, is phenomenal. The downside to it is because they spend so much time catering the enemies to the swordplay, there's not a lot of variety in the enemy types in this game.
It's, I mean, don't make me no mistake, it's still fun to, you know, battle them and kill them. I mean, so far, not too much variety.
It keeps you engaged throughout the entire game because you have to be on your toes. You know, like, for the most part, I think Wind Waker and Twilight Princess improved it with, like, parries and timing and stuff like that. But combat in Zelda game hasn't always been, it's kind of been more of an obstacle than something that's engaging.
Right.
In fact, you have to memorize, like, all of these enemies' movements. Granted, they have huge tells for the most part. But it does keep, you know, like, you'll still fight a deck of Beba, like, 40 hours in, and you're still kind of engaged because you still have to remember to use slice him vertically, to use slice him horizontally. Mm-hmm. Or if it's the other one who, whenever he opens his mouth, he changes his orientation.
Yeah, I just feed him a bomb.
Yeah, that too. That's what I started doing with that. Or using the Beetle, which, again, is such a versatile weapon.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, one of the tougher enemies. And you do fight them more often towards the later end is the Skeletons, because they start off with just two swords, and they end up blocking you in two directions, so you have to hit them anyway. But then they get four swords, and then you have this very narrow window to hit them. And, you know, it's never frustrating, because you, as long as the controls are working with you, and I, like I said, I had four issues with them, and it wasn't like four, this is broken all the time. There's four specific instances in 40 hours where the controls weren't doing what I wanted them to do for like a minute.
I'll tell you what is broken. I mean, I love the motion controls. I love, you know, swordplay. But what is broken and what I just curse when I have to do it is swimming. Swimming, you hold A to swim, and wherever you're aiming the remote is where you swim. So trying to turn around really quickly is a giant pain in the ass.
Does it happen?
And then swimming down, I mean, it's easy to, you know, tilt your wrist up, but just like with bombs, tilting your wrist down is a giant pain.
I'm going to tell you this much then you're probably going to have the same issue I had with one of the segments in the game. It was really frustrating, and the setup is awful. Like I said, it's a phenomenal game. I do have two issues with it, and two of them I can't later in the game. Mm-hmm. But basically, it involves you going back to the same areas and the changes that they make to that. And it's really frustrating in those two segments. But other than that, I had, you know, the game was fine throughout. Like I said, motion has always been proven. I thought motion's always worked. Probably not as well as Zelda, but I did play Red Steel 2, which did similar stuff. I would say even more because Red Steel 2 actually also used your, strength. So you actually have to swing. Like Zelda, you can just kind of wave back and forth and up and down.
Yeah,
you don't need to
put your hold. Directions.
Red Steel, you have to use your whole arm at certain times to take off people's armor and stuff like that. I'm happy. I enjoyed that in Red Steel, too. I'm happy Nintendo didn't go with that in Zelda. But yeah, I think, and Nintendo's smart enough to use it. I think you see it mostly in the boss battles, especially the first one, that it's more than just like wagging your controller as fast as you can because you will get beat up. There are the boss and then the lizard creatures, I think, are the ones that will kick your ass the most if you just waggle at them. And I don't know if you fought the pirate yet, but he does as well.
No, I haven't.
So yeah, any other questions?
All in all, like this this game, it's fresh. It does feel, I mean, it feels like a new game. People, you know, that's the kind of the curse with Zelda is that people will complain that, hey, it's not, you know, it's not enough like Ocarina of Time. It doesn't feel like Zelda. And then when you go do something very new, like Wind Waker, people were I just messed it up. When you do it like Ocarina of Time, people complain that it's too similar. And when you branch off too much, you know, people complain that it didn't feel like Zelda. This still feels like Zelda, but at the same time, it's nowhere close to the vein of Ocarina or Twilight Princess. So, I'm loving it.
It kind of sucks, though, and I guess this will translate into the news, is that you kind of end up with people, like, no matter what Zelda does, it's always going to kind of have to be Zelda.
Yeah.
And there's people who kind of see these elements, and it's like, oh, it's the same game again. But honestly speaking, if you can say that Skyward Sword is just Ocarina of Time retread, I don't really know what you want from a Zelda game to still make it a Zelda game.
I mean, it's got enough differences. You look at any sequel, you could say, you know, it's just blah, 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 retread.
Yeah, but I mean, even, okay, like you said, the structure is different. There's no one overworld. You get, you know, like there's three disconnected areas. I was kind of disappointed that at the end of the game, they were connected. Like I was assuming like some path would open up and the three would become connected or something like that. The combat is a lot more engaging. And the combat's always been, I think Wind Waker is improved on the combat of Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess is improved on the combat of Ocarina of Time. But people never see those changes. And then the traveling, like it gives you the freedom of Wind Waker's ship. But it's not as tedious because the bird has direct control. Granted, there's not much to do on the overworld, but I do like how they kind of mix the overworld on the world where you get the goddess cubes and those kind of open up treasures on the sky world, so you kind of have to go investigate and find where those are located. And sometimes you get like little puzzles in those islands and stuff like that, so that's kind of cool. And, you know, again, I like the focus. It's kind of like Majora's Mask Town where you get a focus on a small group of NPCs, but you get to see them develop and grow over the course of the game instead of just kind of engaging with them once and that's it for the game. But, you know, this Zelda and this week we got word that Zelda apparently won't be the last major Nintendo game for the Wii. Xenoblade Chronicles has been announced for the States.
Wait, hasn't that already come out?
Boom.
Haven't you already played that?
I've faded. I've been fortunate.
Isn't it a bit late?
I don't think it's it. It's, I mean, there are people who, like Anthony, who weren't going to mod their
Wii. I'm excited, Bike.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to say there's a huge market for it, but there's a market, I think, of people who haven't played the game yet, and I'm happy that Nintendo's finally bringing it over. It's a phenomenal game. I've mentioned it time and time again on the podcast.
You know, if only the Europeans made it as much fuss as the Americans do when we don't get a video game. We had loads of games. Oh no, I'm being serious, man. We get a ton of good games.
What was the last thing you didn't get?
I can't think of any specific examples like recently, but I know that we got. This is a bit of a like clinging at straws, but we got the third Phoenix Wright game about 2 years after the fourth one came out.
Oh yeah.
To the point where Capcom, I think they said that they only sold about 300 copies of it in Europe.
Aren't you folks are also missing, what is it, Under Knife from the newest one? From the newest Professor Layton game?
I think so.
Well, to be fair, we're a whole Professor Layton game behind Japan, too, I think, right?
Professor Layton and Phoenix Wright are just really off.
It's because there's so much localization that they
have. But in general, the Americans get more game releases than we do.
It depends. I mean, especially with Nintendo, where I think they've been better to Europe this generation than they have the States. because you folks got into the fake disaster.
I was going to say Disaster Day of Crisis. Maybe. We're still waiting for that.
Yeah. But, man, in terms of more, well, Western games, they just come out in the US and not here a lot of the time. So
It's weird. I was talking about this with a friend yesterday. It's weird that in this time and age with the internet, you can't hide a game. It's not like you can say, shh, nobody knows this came out. It's not like something you get in a video game magazine. Everybody knows that these games come out because the internet is so open that you know what's interesting.
And because of the internet, if people don't, if you don't release your game in a territory, people will get hold of it anyway.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it involves giving you money or not.
I do hope the people who pirated Xenoblade picked it up when it comes out. I mean, granted, it's GameStop and Nintendo.com exclusive, but it's something. I'm kind of curious to see if they bring out the Astoria and Pandora's Tower as well.
If you've got to wait until, what is it, April 2012 for Xenoblade? April? Then you'll be waiting a long time for those as well. You'll be waiting until maybe...
Until the Wii U's out.
Well, fall 2012 for the second one in the trilogy.
Well, I'm kind of curious because, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, part of it is probably Operation Rainfall. The other part of it is I assume they're looking at their calendar and said, we have nothing for Japan. Our time until the Wii U comes out.
Yeah.
So.
These games conveniently happen to be localized into English already, and they kind of want them, so let's release them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think they have, like, one game a month. They have, like, I think it's Rhythm Heaven in January. They have God knows when in February. I think Mario Party 9's in March. Then they have this in April. So I assume the Astoria and Pandora's Tower are going to fall out this summer, and then that's it for the Wii. Which, I mean, granted, it's a better start than this year they had. So,
and at least you get in the games now without Nintendo going, and nope, they're not coming.
And it also sucks because I think Microsoft is one of their better development studios. They've made Disaster's kind of iffy, but the Biting Kaito's games and then Xenoblade are fantastic RPGs. And I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I mentioned it on the site. Xenoblade is one of those games that kind of, it's the anti-Nintendo game. It has full voice acting. It's a grand adventure.
And it's the sort of game we own as boy.
Yeah, and it's not a quote-unquote casual game. It's a new IP. It's a genre they don't usually cover, so it's a lot of things they don't do, and it's like, why are you so hesitant to bring this game here?
Especially if people want it.
And I think, and I've mentioned this before, I think it speaks to the state of the RPG and the fact that one of the biggest publishers of video games is afraid to bring their RPG to the States because they're afraid it won't sell well because it's a very Japanese game. Speaking of, we had two other RPG announcements this week. South Park RPG was announced as the Game Informer big cover story, and that it's made by Obsidian.
I don't know how I feel about this game.
I think, here's the thing, Obsidian has a very good track record working with other people's properties, so I think that bodes well for this game. Even though they have, you know, when they try something new, like Alpha Protocol, not everyone likes it, but, you know, they did KOTOR 2, Neverwinter Nights 2, Fallout New Vegas.
So, yeah, and you know, Trey and Matt are involved with this. My biggest thing is I'm kind of curious to see how the South Park humor translates to a video game for 30, 40 hours.
Yeah, that was my concern, is I can take South Park, I quite like it, the show, but 30 to 40 hours of it in a video game, and it's an RPG. I don't know how it doesn't compute in my brain.
Well, I'm kind of excited about the RPG aspect because from what I've read in Game Informer, it's kind of like a Paper Mario-esque game.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I have Paper Mario and the Mario and Luigi games, and, you know, the more of that, the better.
I hope the South Park game is more than just regurgitation of old jokes, because if anyone's played the South Park Tower Defense game, that's what that was. And it wasn't funny at all because they were just spitting out old stuff. And that's exactly why I don't watch Family Guy. And I want new stuff. I want it to be original, especially if it's going to be an RPG and it's going to be at least 20 hours long.
Well, from what I understand, it's supposed to be a game that's making fun of RPG staples, so we'll see how that goes.
There needs to be more funny games, so I'm all for it.
You see, there's games like Monkey Island, and I think the Ratchet and Clank series is...
And I hope it's... like, because South Park episodes have a habit of being topical, like the week's news, like squished into an episode, because they can churn them out so fast. I hope they don't do that either, because they, what, those so episodes like levels aren't relevant for very long.
What if they have different levels that, like, riff on a, like, you have the Final Fantasy level and the Skyrim level and the Mass Effect level?
I mean, it could be pretty cool.
It depends on how far you can take the joke before it kind of becomes tedious. So I'm kind of curious to see, especially, I want to see the style, like, I assume it's going to model the...
It must be 3D.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, like, is it, does it model the TV show where it looks like a 2D cartoon, where it's like, you know, again, like the Paper Mario games where it's a 2D animation, but it's on a 3D thing.
That's what I think, like the Tower Defense one kind of was.
Or is it going to be a tricky 2D game, which, again, you don't see many RPGs that are tricky 2D, you don't see many games that are tricky 2D these days, so there's that. So yeah. And then we had word that Square Enix is doing an action RPG, and this goes back to the problem a lot of Japanese studios have had this generation, where they're trying to make Western games for some reason. Has anybody seen the artwork for this?
No. I mean, it's UE3. I'm assuming it's going to look like
it's
The Last
be great,
Remnant.
Round enough Space Marines in it.
It kind of looks like a Castlevania-esque RPG.
Yeah.
It's a red and blacks and stuff like that. And again, it looks like a Western it looks like a game made for a Western RPG. But the problem is, as we've seen most of this generation, is that a lot of Japanese studios can't make Western games. Or they don't, or they make Western games, but it's not the Western games that the people in the West want.
Well, I'm assuming because it's an RPG, it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be completely, I think it's going to have an audience because they've got RPG roots. Like, ever since they started. So, they can't mess up the RPG side of it, surely.
I'm sure Square has made bad RPGs before.
I'm assuming it's just because it's something that they know. I mean, yes, they may have made mistakes in the past, but an action RPG seems to be sort of a logical thing for a Japanese developer instead of, we're going to make a shooter now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Like, I think one of the problems is, you know, they're still using things like turn-based combat and like really like stereotypical characters that they've been using for 20 years and they haven't changed them.
I don't mind the characters because again, if you start catering to the dude bro gamer with your characters, then
I'm not saying they should do that either, but
I'm just, it's kind of the same thing. You could say the same thing about most Western games. We kind of use the same stereotype.
Yeah, I mean, people do say that all the time, too.
So I think, you know, again, I think if you stick to what you are, you know, being a very Japanese game, you do that. But you get, you know, like, again, like with the RPG, you can modernize it, which is something CNOJ does, where it doesn't have turn-based combat, but it does have combat it has its roots in RPGs, but it's modernized, where it feels like a game that's been made in 2010, 2011, and not a game that was made in 1990, which is kind of what Dragon Quest does most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and Square will, you know, Square has a lot of chaos with the RPG crew, so they'll always kind of get that benefit of the doubt, no matter how bad Final Fantasy 13 is.
Okay, it wasn't that bad.
Final Fantasy 13 was a good fucking game.
It was flawed, but it wasn't that bad.
Well, I honestly have never played it. I actually borrowed it from a friend to start, and I've just been afraid of starting it.
Like 20 hours before you go.
That's just why I'm afraid of it. But speaking of something else that's getting a bad rep, the PlayStation Vita.
Oh, dear.
Has been running the best first hype train ever.
And not a week goes by before Sony announces something that turns me off it even more than I already was. I mean, I wasn't going to buy the thing anyway, but I may be a bit biased. I know there's a lot of things about it that have been released as a
I honestly think at this point it's hard for... I think it started at E3 at the $250 price, which looked great at the time, especially since it was competing with the 3DS.
Until you find out the sacrifice they have to make in order to have that nice prize.
Yeah, and that's when it becomes an issue. And this latest round of news, of course, was the prices of the memory cards, which is I think it's 4 gigs is like $25, 8 gigs is 40, 16 gigs is 70, and then, what is it, 32 gigs.
$120, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just think, so, you could buy a PSV and a 32 gig memory card for less than you could a 32 gigabyte iPhone. No, for more, even. The Vita and the 32 gig memory card is more than a 32 gigabyte iPhone.
What?
You could add $40 to the 32 gigabyte memory card and get yourself a 3DS, and that comes with stuff built onto it. And memory.
Yeah.
But
Sony's excuse for the proprietary memory cards for security, which is a load of bollocks, because
how
security you put into it, it'll get cracked.
But see, it's like irrelevant too, because I don't have a problem really with the proprietary memory cards, but there's no reason for them to cost this much. Because they're modified SD cards is what they are, you know?
Yeah,
there's no reason. They're just fucking up their own business strategy doing this.
Or even better, just offering like a 10 Naya like SD card adapter or something like that.
Yeah.
Gives people the option. There's no reason you should pay $120 for a 32 gig. You can get that for like $30-$40.
You know, offering standardized memory cards, even though they were slightly proprietary, the PSP was such a bad idea and everybody hated it, so let's change it and make them incredibly expensive.
But even then, didn't the PSP come with memory? Like it came with a memory stick?
Yeah, it did.
The other thing is, and this is the bigger issue, I guess, is a lot of the games need it. It's not like it's a mandatory.
Why the games that come on flashcards, but you can't keep your save on a flashcard? That's supposed to be one of the advantages of a flashcard, right?
The DS and the 3DS have done pretty well, and the GBA, and every Nintendo handheld ever made, actually.
But yeah,
they're just it complicated for.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, you know, and it's not even that. From what I understand, it's not only do the games, not only do some games need them, it's mandatory, but some games won't start if you don't have a memory card. So it's not even like you can say, if it's a pick up and play game, like a puzzle game, you can't even like put it on and say, oh, I'll play for like half an hour.
Is the amount of people I've actually seen defending this. Oh, you don't need 32 gigabytes anyway. It doesn't matter. So? If Nintendo did this, everybody would be hanging them out to dry for it.
And it's incredibly, like, short-sighted, because the longer we go, the more games people are going to be downloading straight to their thing and not wanting to deal with, you know, memory cards and stuff. They've already said every title is going to be available on PSN Store, so it's just hurting the device versus others. Like
One of the main issues I had when they announced this, is that you do cripple the potential of your PSN Store.
Have any of you guys gotten your hands on the PS Vita yet?
No. I would have played one at Eurogamer if they didn't have people sitting there telling me how to use the thing.
There was a San Diego meetup this past week.
I actually got my hands on it today.
Oh, how was it?
It was a lot bigger than I thought it would be. The screen's big. I mean, the system itself is much wider than a 3DS, for example. And at first, the dual sticks kind of threw me off. I wasn't a fan of them at first. But the more I used them, the more I liked them. So, I mean, it's definitely well put together. The virtual reality, the augmented reality, was certainly a lot smoother than the 3DS's. But, I mean, just like what you guys are saying, that memory stuff, I mean, it's difficult enough dropping 250. I know I got my 3DS just by trading stuff in, but 250 and then up to 120 for a memory card is.
It just seems like they have this awesome device that when it came out, you know, started talking about it, had so much like positive buzz, and it seems every month, every step of the way, like the more
just
we know about it,
knife into it,
yeah, it's just. I personally don't see any way it's a successful device at this point.
Did you guys hear that the PlayStation Vita is rumored to only support one PSN account?
Yeah, it's not rumored apparently. Like I said, there was a San Diego meetup and that came with it.
And if you want to change your PSN account, you have to restore the thing to factory settings and wipe the memory card or something.
And the other thing, I don't think we mentioned this on the show, is the UMD passport.
Oh, dear.
Where you essentially have to pay again to move your games from UMDs to the PSV.
And you're not even guaranteed to get your UMDs on your PSV, because a lot of, I think Capcom doesn't support it, I don't think Konami supports it. There's a lot of, there's the big name companies don't.
Yeah, basically if you want your UMDs, just keep your PSP around.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and this
and if you want to play your PS1 games that you got off the Japanese PSN store, keep your PSP as well.
Yep.
And this goes back to what Jason was saying. It was kind of funny because when this the news came out about the UMD thing, is somebody started a thread on NeoGAF. I don't know if any of you visited that, where they're talking about, like, when was backwards compatibility important in the handheld anyway? And it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, you want to defend a bad decision, so you kind of, you know what, it's not that important. But
I mean, to be fair, you know, like, that's not the thing that's going to keep buying one, but, like, it's just one thing on top of all the other poor decisions that they've made.
Like I said, at E3, it had a lot of good faith behind it. The price was perfect and stuff like that. Well, I mean, the price was, again, was comparative to the 3DS. It was much better. Nintendo set the price. That was the first thing. And then, since Tokyo Game Show, like, everything that's come out about the system has just been like, yeah, we got this price point, but we have to screw over the consumer in so many ways to get there. Like, you have to buy this memory card. You have to pay to, you know, get your UMDs on the PSP. You can't pay your PSN1 classics. You can only have one account, so people can't borrow games.
And, you know, on top of that, on top of all this plummeting, you know, interest in the Vita, the 3DS is suddenly becoming, like, a very respectable machine. Like,
well, I think, and this goes back to, we've had this discussion before, the 3DS was never a non-respectable machine.
No, it needed the lineup, and now it's getting more and more and more and more, and that was the main, you know, flaw with it.
And that was the thing that people were saying, is that it's short-sighted to sell it short, because, yes, Nintendo had a lot of missteps with the device, but at the end of the day, they never really showed their hands until now with 3D and Mario Kart.
At least they got the fundamentals with the hardware down.
Yeah, and, you know, stuff. And then next year is even, you know, you have Kid Icarus, you have Resident Evil. So it was always kind of like people were just kind of impatient because there was nothing there, which I agree, which is fine. I get it. You know, you go 6 months without really any major killer app that's a new game. Zelda was there, Star Fox was there. Street Fighter was here, but there were ports and remakes of older games. But now you're kind of in the groove. You got Nintendo's big two, Mario Kart and Mario, you know, Super Mario. And it's Christmas season, which is why I've always said it was short-sighted to say anything about the device before it hit a Christmas.
Right. Christmas and with a Mario game.
Yeah.
So those are huge. Plus, does anyone think we're not going to get a 3DS Lite next year? Because that's going to be another boost.
I don't think we'll get it next year. I would assume, if anything, around March 2013 with the new Pokemon game.
And I'll be all over that.
See? I think...
I mean, as soon as they drop that 3DS Lite, then I'm on board.
Yeah.
That Frankenstick built in.
That second analog stick. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
And the other thing, I don't know if any of you have seen this now, but Nintendo's actually advertising their online stuff for the 3DS.
Online in Mario Kart 7 is really good.
I've heard
groups and communities and stuff, and you can race together and
certain rules like no items or 150cc and stuff, which is a great. You know, again, Mario Kart Wii also had some pretty good stuff for online for Nintendo. It's just that they go at Mario Kart and then they don't. Yeah. Not a system. Because, like, Mario Kart had the entire channel for itself. You can invite friends from your.
But it sounds like Nintendo are taking small steps to putting it into the. The actual console, which is nice.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about the update that comes out December 8th, where they're adding 3D video, which I think will be a huge get if anybody ever... Like, I don't think YouTube supports 3D videos yet, does it?
I think it does. I think there's a 3D channel.
If you can record your own 3D videos and put it on YouTube and stuff, I think that's going to be a decent boom. Granted, I think it's really short. It's like a minute long or something.
Yeah, but still, just to be able to... You know, the whole device is built around 3D. Like, that's... It's a gimmick, but it's one that it should have. Just like the AR games, you know?
Yeah, the AR games are fantastic.
Yeah, it's just another little incentive like that.
I think the AR games and the, I don't know what you call them, the built-in software, it's really cheesy and stuff, but I enjoyed them. They give you, again, it kind of builds on that social aspect where it gives you a reason to walk around with your handheld. Because I finished, during the Zelda and Super Mario launch, I finished my puzzles. And I'm up to the final boss in Find Me, and this update brings Find Me 2 and more puzzles, which I'm excited for. Again, it gives me reason to take my 3DS out and meet other people. The update also brings demos of retail games to the 3DS, which is nice. I mean, the DS had demos, but you had to have a Wii to do it, or you had to go to stores, but this, it gives you the ability to download games while your system's off. I hope it also gives you the ability to queue downloads. I hated that about the Ambassador games, is that you have to download, you just have to find the one game, you have to download it, the system went back, you found the other game, you downloaded it. It's a very tedious process. The Mario brought improvements to the friends list. You can see what your friends are saying. You can invite them to games. I don't think you can send them messages yet. But again, they're taking baby steps, and I hope they take all these baby steps and apply them to the Wii U fully when it comes out before.
Yes, please.
You can't unlearn things anyway, so.
Well, again, like I said, Nintendo's has been like, online for the Wii, for example. You had stuff like Mario Strikers Charge, which had a leaderboard. You had wiki rankings with your friends and stuff like this. That was in no other Nintendo game. Mario Kart had the channel. It had, you know, a way to invite your friends from your Wii system without actually having to input a unique Mario Kart Wii code. You could join your friends in progress, even if they were playing worldwide games and stuff like that.
They're learning, and Nintendo aren't unlearning, so that's a good thing.
And then, you know, they had voice chat in Animal Crossing, and no other of their games had that, so. And then Smash Brothers had the ability to befriend people you played with, even though they weren't necessarily friends. So yeah, it's like they have online in chunks. They just need to kind of roll it together into one package. Speaking of, like we said, last week was Black Friday, huge boom for the gaming industry as usual.
For every industry, really.
Well, yeah, for two companies in particular, because certain ones were kind of quiet about their sales figures. I'm not sure why. But Sony said nothing about it. Oh, they said that like, did well, but they didn't give exact figures. Microsoft gave figures. I think the Xbox 360 sold about 900,000 during.
Oh, it was 960K.
Yeah.
960K.
Almost a billion. Oh, wait.
Huh?
A million. Sorry, a million. I meant almost a million. I was like, wait, billion. In 1 week. That's crazy.
Yeah, and then 800,000 of that was Black Friday, basically. They said it within a 24-hour period, but I assume that's Black Friday. 750,000 units of Kinect were sold as well. I mean, granted, a bunch of those numbers kind of get jumbled up, because I assume the 750,000 Kinects were also combined with some of the 360 sales. The Wii sold 500,000 on Friday. The DS family, not including the 3DS, sold, I think, 925,000. They haven't said the 3DS figures, but I think people worked it out to be about 660,000 for the month, or for, you know, the time up until Black Friday. Zelda sold, I think it's something like 535,000 in its first week. Super Mario 3DN sold 500,000 in its first week. It's already a million seller based on the sales figures in Japan as well. I think that was it for sales figures. I mean, Just Dance sold. I think Just Dance sold 700,000.
700 billion copies, because it's Just Dance, and it always sells that much.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Just Dance is probably, I would say, the fifth or sixth largest franchise in gaming this generation, and nobody really pays it any mind. It was a great Black Friday, except for Sony, apparently, who don't want to talk about it. This week is MPD, so I can't wait to see that, but we won't be discussing that on air, so there's that. Capcom has announced plans to develop and publish a Sour Patch game for Xbox Live Arcade and PSN. And yeah, Sour Patch as in the gummy candies you buy from the store.
I think so this could potentially be...
Because we don't have such a thing in this country.
You don't have Sour Patch Kids?
No, it's a U.S. candy.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. You should import some after you play this game. By the way, if it's like a platformer or something, it could be pretty cool. All the colors and stuff. I don't know. It's probably will be bad, but.
But I just say this generation has shown one thing, is that action games don't necessarily need to be bad. We know that with Batman, but I was talking like the Doritos games on Xbox Live are actually pretty damn good.
Well, they're not licensed games per se. They're more sponsored.
Yeah, sponsored. Yeah. And what's the other one? Crash Course.
Yeah, I was going to say about licensed games. Yeah, Crash Course, and there was
Dash of Destruction.
There's Dash of Destruction, and then there was the racing game as well. I can't remember what that's called.
Yaris, that was not
good. No, no, Yaris is awful. No, the Dorito is like a destruction derby type.
Yeah.
And that's fun as well. Like you said, Transformers, Batman, of course, which is probably in the run of Game of the Year for that.
Did anybody play Captain America? I heard that was actually pretty decent.
I played the demo when I got to check out the event at Sega, and I wasn't too keen on it. I did enjoy the Thor game. I enjoyed Thor on the Wii. The best version of Thor was the DS version and the Wii version and the 360 PS3 version. Though, the reason I wasn't too keen on Thor was because the person gave me the game without any instructions during a boss battle. So it's just like, what am I supposed to be doing here? Captain America, I think, again, I enjoyed the DS version, the Wii version, and the HD version. So there's that. And finally, this is something that isn't really news, but something I wanted to talk about because it's been getting on my it's always got on my nerves when people try to disqualify games or game experiences for one reason or another. But over the past week and a half or so, I don't know if any of you have read this, what is Rock Paper Shotgun had an article about how Call of Duty is an on game, and the fact that it's a not only is it a linear experience, but it's a experience.
It's a restrictive linear experience.
Yeah. It's so controlled that you don't have any real say in what happens. Like, you know, like you kind of play a role in a larger scheme of things because other people are kind of doing all the important stuff, and you're just kind of offering support and backup.
Yeah, you're just there to shoot the other people.
And, I mean, I the critique of Call of Duty, I think, is a fair thing. You know, it is what it is.
Well, I think it's more of a statement upon the genre nowadays. One of the reasons why I love Serious Sam 3 so much is because it said, here is a ton of enemies, here is a ton of weapons, kill them however you like. And if you die, we're not going to hold your hand. It's your fault. You know? And whereas with Call of Duty, it's you get put forced into a corridor, Mustache Man says something for about 5 minutes, and then he opens the door for you, and then you can finally go through.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I don't think the critique of the game in itself is bad, but the fact that he called it an ungame is where I really take issues because, I mean, you may not like it, which is a fair point, but, you know, it's still a game, it's still an experience, and there's people who enjoy it. Just say you had these
issues. I think the comment ungame, I think he could have worded it a little better. I think what he's trying to get at is it works more as a movie than it does a game, even though it is a game.
And I've said that before.
That is that's a fair critique, but I think ungame is the wrong way of putting it because if you say ungame, then you're suggesting that there's no game elements at all when there are.
I can understand that. I mean, at some point, I've had this comment on the forums and on Twitter, is that Call of Duty might as well be a rail shooter at this point.
Yes.
There's really not much difference between that and a rail shooter, except that you get the illusion of actually moving the character forward. But yeah, again, this is kind of like the same thing I've had with this movement this generation, where you kind of disqualified games for being casual or mobile or social games, because they didn't have what you call traditional game elements. And, you know, again, it's kind of, a lot of people are just not used to this flexibility with the game industry changing and the idea of, like, a massive game being the only type of game people can enjoy. Like, some people just kind of want to have fun, and some people want to have that cinematic experience, which at times come at the expense of an interactive experience.
Yeah.
Again, like I said, I agree with the critique of Call of Duty. I don't necessarily agree with disqualifying it for being a game because of those problems.
Yeah, you definitely, ungame was definitely the wrong way of explaining it.
Yeah, and then that went back and forth with Kotaku, and then he did
Destructoid.
And Destructoid, I wanted to bring the Destructoid one, and I've mentioned Jim Sterling before. I have my issues with his writing. I do agree with him most of it, but his response didn't really seem like a response to the article. It seemed more like a critique of the guy writing the article.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from with that one.
So that was my issue. It was kind of funny, though, to see the game industry get up in arms about something and kind of have an infight among themselves. This is actually something I pointed out with Anthony as well, is I like the fact that IGN had a lot of video game sites over the summer had the 3DS is doomed, the 3DS, you know, this and that. And then they turn around and, like, it's done well because Mario come out and, like, how Mario saved the 3DS. I'm just thinking, like, If you weren't so short-sighted and wrote it off during the summer, you wouldn't have to have written this article 4 months later when it's improved. And I'm not necessarily saying that the 3DS is in the queue now. It still has its problems, and, you know, Mario's not going to come out every year. So it still has a lot more to prove, but I do think it's in a better shape now. Yeah. But I wouldn't say that the 3DS is saved either, and I think that's short-sighted because, you know, if it does well, it's like the Wii, for example, does tremendous during the Christmas season the last 2 years. Rest of the year, meh. So if the 3DS has a similar problem where it does well during the holidays and then it doesn't sell that great during the year, then you're going to come back and say the 3DS is doing well again, and then it comes out next Christmas, the 3DS is saved. And I'm sure we're going to, and we've already seen articles with it about the PSV being doomed. So, yeah, there's that. I think that's it for news. If anybody has anything else to talk about.
How do you guys feel about a Tetris subscription, by the way?
I saw that too. That's retarded.
It's EA.
Oh, speaking of EA and retardedness, and this is for Jason. Since he's, I think, the only person who supports the online pass, I did not know that the online pass actually expired.
That's retarded too. There's no reason for that.
Yeah, apparently it's a bunch of people picked up Need for Speed, whatever it was from last year.
Hot Pursuit.
Yeah, and they found that, they bought it new, and they found out that their online pass
And you know fine. What, the funny thing was, is at some point I was going to pick that game up. Oh well.
It's really good. I mean, okay, we should also say that you, if you call them, that you still get an online pass for free, which is an annoying step and unnecessary and unacceptable, but just public announcement. You know, if you're an online pass subscriber, you're not like, or expired, you're not necessarily left out cold.
And I'm not gonna say, and movies do this as well, and I think it's also, like, if you buy, like, Blu-rays and stuff, the digital copies for those things actually expire after a year or two, which is kind of annoying as well. But, yeah, there's no but, that's annoying as well.
There's no defense for it.
We had questions, but we're already over the hour mark, and I wanted to talk about the next month or so of the podcast, so we'll save that for later, or another episode. Okay, so like I said at the start of the podcast, this is the last traditional one we're doing for the remainder of this year. It's the first week of December, whatever, and you know, between a lot of you are still in school, a lot of you have finals, and then Christmas and New Year's, it's too much of a hassle to find everybody every weekend to get them together to record the show. So we're just gonna like record a bunch of them in bulk ahead of time and just cut them up over the next 4 or 5 weeks. And in order to do that, we had to make sure they weren't topical. Well, I think the next one actually is topical. I believe the next one we're doing is, or if we're still doing this, it's supposed to be doing a drinking game to the VGAs.
When is the VGAs again?
Next Saturday, I believe. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure Chad will do it.
You can count me in. I'm down to do that. I think that was my idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So yeah, we're doing that, which, you know, that should be topical because the VGAs are whatever. We might do a mini one ahead of time. I wanted to do this, but Chad's already ruined it. I wanted to have a prediction show, and for every prediction you got wrong, you had to take a shot. But Chad said he would just get them all wrong anyhow.
We could do that. I like that.
But it's not fun if he's going to purposely get them wrong.
Oh, it'll be fun for us.
After that, I think the idea is that we're going to do, and, you know, it may change over the course of the week it happens. I want to do, like, a top 10 best games of this generation list. And the reason I'm doing this is because we had on the website, we had the top 10 games of all time list, which wasn't voted on by, well, I mean, we had our say, but it wasn't really, it wasn't our list, it was the community list, and people voted and stuff like that. And I don't necessarily agree with the top 10 list, but I also didn't want to just turn around and say, you know what, our fans don't count. We're just going to do our own top 10 games of all time just to make that the official one. So that will stand for now, and we'll do a top 10 game of all time just sometime next year. But I did want to do a top 10 just because I think it's an interesting experiment to do it online and have it on air and have everybody argue for their stake. So
it was fun last year.
The idea behind this is that everybody comes in with something like 6 or 7 games that they think are the best games of this generation. And, you know, we'll have Ken, hopefully, and that will make about 36 to 40 nominees. So the first half of the podcast.
There's going to be significant overlap.
Yeah, there'll be some overlap. I don't assume we're all going to have the same exact 6 games.
No, but I'm sure we'll have
Yeah.
Three of the same or so.
Yeah. Well, it would be enough to, it would be somewhere between 20 and 40 games, yeah. We'll put it that way. And then the idea is for the first half of the podcast is one for everybody to say what their six games is, and then to narrow down those 20 to 40 games into a list of 10. The second half of the podcast would actually be us trying to organize it into a list of 1 through 10, counting down from best, well, you know, number 10 to number 1 in our favorite. And that, I think, will be the part that's going to cause issue, because I don't think we all necessarily agree with what the best game of this generation is. So just making a case for that. The second podcast we want to do, and this was last year, and a lot of game companies do this, game podcasts do this, they have the Game of the Year podcast at the end, during December. And we did that last year, and it's okay, but I feel like a lot of people do save up games for Christmas and stuff like that. So, you know, like, if you get a game for Christmas that might make the list, might not necessarily change your mind. I didn't want to do anything before the end of the year, and everybody got to play what they wanted to play. So we're going to do a Game of the Year Countdown podcast, where we kind of review all the major games that came out this year. And, you know, at this point, I'm sure we all have ideas of what is a potential Game of the Year and what's probably not going to make the cut. Yeah, so we'll just...
I have, like, mine's already down to 2, I think.
Yeah, mine's just down to 3 or 4. And, you know, but there are other games, like Anowar, for example, I think is a great game. It's never going to be my Game of the Year contender.
It's going to be one of my 6, I'll tell you that.
but we'll discuss why during that episode and stuff like that. And again, depending on how long that goes, we might shift that up into 2. And then that will cover the next, like I said, the next 4 to 5 weeks of the podcast. So that's there. In addition to that, like I said, we're going to do our Game of the Year podcast sometime in January, and much like last year, we're also going to open up the phone line so that other people can share with us their Game of the Year and other nominees and stuff, awards and stuff like that. I do enjoy, you know, there's 6 of us here for the most part, depending on the week. But I do like hearing other people's Game of the Years, because you have a lot of people who, like, I've heard podcasts, I've had people on Twitter, you know, like, I've seen people for Super Mario 3D, I've seen Zelda, I've seen Skyrim, and then I've seen people who just disqualify those games altogether for one reason or another. So I like to hear other people's arguments as to why they picked such and such a game. And I think that covers it for the next, like I said, month and a half. So is there anything you folks want to plug?
I don't have anything.
Donkey Kong 64.
Donkey Kong 64, yes, and Anthony will sing part of this song, I guess, during one of these shows. Or we'll get him really drunk one day and have him just randomly drunk show it out. so yeah, as always, you can find us on iTunes, leave us reviews and stuff like that. Hopefully by the time this, well, not by the time this comes out, we'll have something up on Zelda sometime this week. It's difficult. I enjoy reviewing games, but I don't like reviewing them like right after I finish them, because I feel like that's kind of like the honeymoon period. You kind of want to make it sit and settle in your head so you can think about everything you want to say and not just like rush to your keyboard as soon as the final credits roll. So I'll have something on that. So for Chad, Jason, Daniel, Anthony, and myself, this has been Do World in episode 53.
Yeah, later, y'all.
See ya. Here we go. Till the finally here. Performing for you. If you know the words, you can join in too. Put your hands together if you wanna clap. As we take you through this monkey rap. This game, Donkey Kong. He's the leader of the bunch. You know him well. He's finally back to kick some tail. No.
like a